I'm a member of Arca Heights, and I'm my name's Mark. I got 4 minutes to talk. You know, when old Norm Baker was here, you know, the speaker was lucky if they got 8 minutes. But it's kind of strange coming down here without Norm Baker. I talked at this meeting at 5 different places and 16 times. And like Mark, he asked me to talk in January, you know, and I thought it was because he loved my talk, you know. And I found out he always asked me to come a Super Bowl Sunday when he couldn't get nobody else to come. So Mark Clark and asked me to come in January, and I said, okay, I'll come in January. Another Norm Baker, see? And they called me up and says, oh, I didn't really tell you to come in January. I actually told you to come in December. So here I am, you know. And Norm started something with this meeting, and he started that hugging, you know. And I still can't hug without feeling a little guilty, you know, because I have a sponsor that used to say hugging can be dangerous to your health. And for an alcoholic of my type, that's really true, you know. Shake hands with a woman and automatically you're going to get married or try to kill yourself, you know. And he sued my wife with that, though. He said, Paul, are you sick? And I said, yeah, I'm sick. And he says, how sick are you? And I said, pretty sick. And he said, that's right. And anybody sick enough to go out with somebody as sick as you are is too sick for you to be going out with. And that's one of the things my sponsor gave me that saved my life. Previous to that, I had spent 22 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, having drinking pool most of the time. I had to go out and relapse and then come back, you know. I pretty much stayed here. So the old timers, you know, they used to get up and old Tom, for one, he used to say, well, I did real good until I got to that old 34 circle group, you know, and every time I got there, I smelt brandy, you know, and I never had the heart to tell him, you know, that he was smelling real brandy, and it wasn't part of his disease. Before I got here for real, my last 3 years, I went to 3 meetings a day, every day. And I had 5 sobriety days every day, but I went to meetings. And my last year, I went to 3 meetings a day. And during them 3 meetings, I could no longer go an hour and a half. And halfway through a meeting, I'd have to go back in the bathroom and get 3 fingers of whiskey to make it through the last half at the meeting. So when I got here for real, things had to be different. And And I kind of want to congratulate God and Alcoholics Anonymous on your 29 years, and happy week to you. I don't know what I'm doing out there when you should be out there with 29 years. But I'm 23 years saved my life, because the way I drank, all them times I spent in meetings kept me alive long enough that I could hurt enough that there would come a time when I would do what you people told me to do. And during them 22 years, I tried everything I ever heard of in Alcoholics Anonymous, except read the book, work the steps, and pray to God, see? And one of the first 40 people, I got for a sponsor down Los Angeles one time, and the reason I picked up on him was, at that time, he was 35 years sober, and nobody in the country had more than 36 years at that particular time. And he used to get up at podiums and say, "I have been sober 35 years, and I've never found it necessary to do the fourth or fifth step, you know?" And that's the kind of sponsor I wanted. If I could have a female sponsor, if I could have a female sponsor, I wanted that. See, my first 15 years, I only had a male sponsor, you know, because somebody had told me that sobriety was a sexual transmitted disease, and I believed it. And one time down California in Orange County, I had a woman sponsor, and I got drunk on her about 3 times in 10 days, and she says, "Only way I'm going to sponsor you anymore is if you go meet a guy by the name of Chuck Chamberlain." Well, for those of you that don't know about Chuck C., he was one of them guys that the rest of us thought like on water, you know. And I went out and met him in Laguna, and she says, "Well, what do you think after I heard him talk?" I said, "Man, he is so dumb, and he's standing right there, you know. He is so dumb, and he don't realize how miserable he is." And I couldn't hear the Chuck Chamberlains. I couldn't hear the Norm Bankers. And thank God for the Clancys and the Clarence Snyders and the Bill Scullys, because I could hear them guys. You know, a lot of people do well with love. And a lot of people do well in this program with sharing. But thank God the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has got a wedge that's going to fit every nut, you know. And even nuts like me, you know. And thank God for them tellers. The guys that don't know the word love except, "Sit down, shut up, dummy." That's what they call love, you know. And I sobered 13 years, you know, before it dawned on me that Chuck Chamberlain, he used to talk all the time about, "I got to set the record straight," you know. That never made sense to me, you know. And then when I was 13 years sober, I realized what Chuck Chamberlain was saying when he said, "I got to go get the record straight." It was the same thing that Clancy was saying when Clancy said, "You stole that, dummy. Go put it back." they were saying the same thing, you know, but I could hear the Clancy's, you know. So I really believe today that no matter where you're at, no matter what you do, Alcoholics Anonymous has got something that will keep you sober. And it don't matter if you get it by the good doers, or you get it by the hard hitters. I used to get real upset when somebody said, "Got to take our first aid stops," you know, every day. And I thought, you take them first 9 steps once, and you live off of steps 10, 11, and 12. And today I realize in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not important what you do here. You can do just about anything and stay sober and clean. Some people will say, "Hang on." Other people will say, "Let go." Some people will say, "Take a first step once a year." Other people will say, "Take a test step once a year." Written one. It really doesn't matter what you do, as long as it's not your idea. If it's your idea, then you're very trouble. That's why my favorite prayer is, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and a sponsor that knows the difference." So I got to my first AA meeting when I was either 17 or 18. Them days were kind of vague in my mind. I was on my third skid row. I'd already been kicked out of the Marine Corps for alcoholism. And I was up in Chicago, and I got arrested 23 times in 22 days. One day I missed being arrested. But 2 days, I got it twice. So they recommended me into adult court, and they sent me to Mantino State Hospital. And the doctor said, "You're an alcoholic." Well, today I know I wasn't. There's only one way to become an alcoholic, and that's to catch it. And it can only be caught, I think, by reading this book, listening to a sponsor, going to these rooms, and working the first 9 steps, and then you become an alcoholic. Some people say they're alcoholic before they work the first 9 steps, but there's always that thing back there saying, "Not really." It takes them 9 steps and meetings, a good sponsor, even a spot to really become an alcoholic. But this doctor told me, "You're an alcoholic." And my only reaction was, "Thank God. Thank God. That means it's not my fault. I can drink as much as I want to. I can hurt anybody I want to, and I can do anything I want to, and it ain't my fault because I was born that way." A couple of years later, the doctor told me I was going to die next time out. And I said, "Thank God. That means I only have to go through this one more time." But that doctor was wrong, and there was hundreds and thousands of more times. Today I know why. But back in them days, I didn't really expect any help from God. And I didn't know He was helping me at that time. because he knew what I was going to become with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 12 cons. But I go to meetings and I tell you people I don't believe in God, but I knew there was a God. There's no way anybody could suffer the way I suffered up there. Wasn't a God pecking on him, son. And I didn't know why God was pecking on me, but he was. I knew that. I got proof positive. And what made me even worse was he got every woman on the West Coast to help him. And that became unfair, you know. So this doctor told me I was an alcoholic. And I went to my first AA meeting, and the first speaker says, buy the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So during halftime, I bought a book, and after halftime, the second speaker got up and says, take what you like and throw the rest out the window. Well, these guys that tell you that, they forget to tell you you're going out the window with it, you know. So I took a black felt pen, and I crossed out all the God parts, all the spiritual parts. I had some good parts left, though, you know. The world and its people could be quite wrong. People hurt you seemingly without provocation, you know. And I really stayed drunk for 22 years on them words. And another sentence in the book that helped me stay drunk was a place where it says, all you really have is a daily reprieve contingent on a fixed spiritual condition. That was the most dangerous sentence in that book for me, because I was going out trying to maintain a fit spiritual condition. And I kept having drinking pills, and I wondered why, see? But the hardest thing there is in Alcoholics Anonymous is to try and maintain something you ain't got in the first place. And I couldn't maintain a fresh spiritual condition because I'd never worked in the first 83 pages from the textbook. So, a few years later, I ended up in court. And I was wrapped in a 30-foot length of chain. Because last time I was in that courtroom, these great big flying gray eggs came after me. And I was throwing chairs at him. And it turned out they weren't really flying gray apes. It was the judge. So I pleaded guilty. I pleaded not guilty. Back in them days, I was always pleading not guilty. And the judge had the opportunity to either accept my plea or hold it for trial. And he said, take the kid across to the Orange County Jail, and I'll decide this afternoon. So the Orange County Marshals took me over to the Orange County Jail, and the Orange County Deputy Sheriff, that was the booking sergeant, threw up his hands and says, I refuse to take that kid as a prisoner at my jail. That was the first deal I ever got any sex out of. A year or so later, I got any sex out of Los Angeles County Jail. And that was the last big resentment that I had. Because I hated that jail because they 86'd me and they took Charles Manson, you know. That wasn't right. How could they take Charles Manson to jail and not take me? So, the reason that cop had 86'd me was, last time I was in that jail, I was starting to get sober. And the one thing I couldn't stand was being sober, because I had to live with Paul. And I couldn't stand them thoughts and no torpedoes. And so when I started to get sober, I lit the mattress on fire. And I stuck my head down into that mattress, because I knew God would get me to the Orange County Hospital and give me a shot of morphine and anything rather than live with Paul. Today, I want to tell you that Paul is my best friend. Today, I have a love affair with Paul, but always wasn't that way. That's why I love everybody in this room, not because of what you are, but because of what I become when I'm with you. And so, I went to the hospital. Judge let me go to the hospital. And I don't know if you know it or not, but alcoholism is a progressive disease. So 10 years later, things started to get a little rough, you know? And I was in the VA hospital, and I got a lawyer to sue the hospital and the doctor and make them let me go to AA meetings. Because, see, Alcoholics Anonymous is not for those that need it. I needed it 10 years prior to this. It's not even for those that want it. But the doctor agreed to let me go to AA meetings. In condition, I went in a straitjacket. Now, some of you have never been to a meeting in a straitjacket yet, and you feel it's an opportunity you don't want to miss. I'll be real glad to tell you how later, see? And so I continued to drink. A couple of years later, I finally found a woman sick enough to stay with me long enough that we had a baby. And I got 19 months sober, you know. Week after the baby got born, she kept me out, so I tried another suicide attempt and ended back up in the hospital. And some of them people from AA come to take me to a meeting. And it talks about them people with the big grins. Oh, I hated them grins on them people. Oh. And so we went to a meeting. And I walked in. And there were two guys talking. And they both were just barely a year sober. And they were talking about what is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, you're both wrong. I took them directly and put in the book they were talking about, showed them where they both were wrong. But see, Alcoholics Anonymous is not for those that need it. It's not for those that want it. And it's not for those that understand it. So I continued to drink. I got people down in San Diego. One in particular was a New York delegate. He's got almost 40 years sober. And he calls me Splasher because I carried a message to him, told him how to do it. And he did what I told him to do, and he stayed sober, and I didn't. See? So Alcoholics Anonymous ain't for those that need it. It's not for those that want it. It's not for those that understand it. And it's certainly not for those that talk about it. That's why I like this new book so well. Because there's one, and when I read that, I said, yeah, that's right. And then she says, there's not a chapter in the book into feeling. And I said, yeah, that's right. And then he said, there is a chapter into this book into action. And I said, wow. So, Alcoholics Anonymous is for those that do it. And I finally reached a point I couldn't stand it no longer. So I decided to kill myself one more time. I went out and I bought a hot load of heroin. Now, I was not a heroin user. I just bought it as an instrument to die with. And I got ready to put it into my vein. And just before I started to put it into my vein, a thought crossed my mind. What if Bill Scully, Clancy, and Clarence Snyder were right, and you died for no reason? And I stopped. And then I remember something that Clancy had said 10 years before. He said, if you're having trouble with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, go to the guy you hate the most, because he got the most of what you need. I knew who that guy was, because he carried one of these books with him, and he talked about God, and he talked about working the steps. And I would go to a meeting, and I'd check the parking lot to make sure his car wasn't in the parking lot. And if it was, I'd go across town to another meeting. One of the greatest spiritual experiences I ever had was when I found out they were checking the parking lot for my car. So I went to this guy and I says, will you help me? And he says, I've been waiting for you. He knew I'd have to go to him sooner or later because he had faith in the booze. And they knew the booze would force me to him, because he had the answer. And he says, I'll work with you on one condition. And I said, what's that? And he says, you got to do everything I tell you to do. You knew what I was getting ready to tell him, don't you? But before I could tell him that, he said, what I'm going to tell you to do is right. Because it comes from the basic textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I don't know it at the time, but that's when I made my first surrender. And it don't matter what you make the first surrender to. Some people do it to God. Some people do it to step one. Some people do it to a sponsor. Some people do it to a judge. It don't matter. I did it at the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my fear was, we spent 3 weeks working on the first 83 pages and doing the first 9 steps. And my fear was not that it wouldn't work, but if it didn't work, some idiot would come up and say, did you write this thing over here on page 62? And if I could say yes, that meant nothing was settled, you know. I want to settle this question once and for all. If it failed, that was all right with me. That meant I could go ahead and die. But if it failed, I wanted it to be because the book failed, because the steps failed, not because I left something out. And he said, before you can, he took me to the most important part, chapter 5, and I said, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. This book, But he made me buy a new book, one that had the God parts in it. You'll pick out the horse, and not, this is a horrid program, you know. Try working it without no God parts, you know. And so I call him up, and I got 100 promises, not of keeping. I got 150 promises, not of keeping. And finally I call him up, I says, I got 300 promises. And he says, that's more than I got. You can quit reading now. So at the end of 3 weeks, we went up on a hill and I told that guy my entire life story. And he started shoving them lists at me, told me to pick out one of them resentments in case I changed my mind. I wanted a little drinky pool. And I kept pushing them. And he did the same thing with the fears and the sex list and the character defects. And he says, this is your last chance. You better pick out some of them character defects so you can go out and have a drinky pool. I said, no. You mean you're ready for God to remove them all? And I said, yeah, and we got on our knees right there, and we said that seven-step prayer. And God did one of three things with every one of them character defects. Some of them he eradicated, and they haven't come back in 22 years. Other ones, he sensitized me to them. And I can no longer do them things with the immunity. And may I do them, I gotta go make amends. Ooh, I still hate that. But I heard a guy say on tape one time, what you're doing when you're admitting you're wrong is saying, I'm now wiser than I once was, you know, and I could buy that. So that may be all right. And other things he didn't do anything with, but he took away the guilt. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't guilty of anything. And it was all right to be me. And I was no longer a nothing. And I was no longer a mistake. And I don't want to ever be a nothing again. And I never want to be a mistake again. Now, he promised me if I'd read this book 15 minutes every day, I would never take a drink. And I did that up until about a month ago when I went to see my doctor and she called 911. And I had about 50-some books out my car, every kind of big book there is. But I got took up to that hospital without a big book. And it was the first time in 22 years that I did get to read the book for 15 months, but I recited it, you know. I know parts of it long enough that I spent 30 minutes reciting it, you know. So God kept me sober the next day anyway, even though I didn't read that book. And he told me as long as I had worked steps 10, 11, and 12, I'd never have to take another drink. Even when it was a necessity, and I've had some necessities. 2 weeks ago, I had retired from a job I loved, and I had to go out to this week and say goodbye to them people and have a goodbye party. And it was a necessity to take a drink, and I didn't even think about it. So when all else fails, you pick up the textbook, you follow directions, and then you get to come to an AA meeting. Now some people say you gotta give it away to keep it. I don't believe that. I believe you gotta give it away in order to get it in the first place. And my sponsor had me out making 12-step calls when I was 3 weeks sober. I've heard people say you can't find a wet drunk anymore. I still got my share of them. And sometimes I think I got somebody else's share. So God bless you, each and every one. But God already did that because you're in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.